Hey guys, and welcome to the show. We're going to be talking about Azure again today, and I know we've done a lot of shows on Azure. In fact, I kind of feel like we've, you know, beat the Azure as a platform horse to death. So I wanted to talk about software as a service and how Azure fits into that. And so without further ado, let's play the music. Hey, Ryan, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. How are you today, Lex?
I'm sunburnt. I was on vacation for 2 weeks and just enjoyed every second of it. Took up paddle boarding.
Now it looks like you're in a warehouse.
So here's the scoop with that. Thank you for bringing that up, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. Microsoft does this really cool thing with teenage girls, high school age girls that are interested in technology. We have this thing called DigiGirls, and we bring them in. We introduce them to different types of technology, and it's just a way for us to, kind of get women interested in technology. And so it works out actually very well for everybody involved. It's great for us because we have a broader pool to pick from. It's great for them because they get to learn some really cool, interesting stuff. And it's bad for me because they're doing it over where I normally record this podcast. So I have been relegated to the other end of the floor, which we actually use for storage. If I were to turn the camera around, you'd see, you know, tons of chairs and tables turned upside down and boxes of carpet squares and all sorts of really cool stuff. But it works, and I'm just happy to be here.
As long as they let you take your red stapler down in the basement.
there you go. As long as I've got my stapler with me.
All right. Well, cool stuff.
Yeah.
So I know in the past...
In
the past, we talked quite a bit about Azure, and we introduced some concepts of some infrastructure as a service, plumbing, and demonstrated it basically an entire data center in the cloud. We kind of did some introductions to Azure. So why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe what you wanted to see today?
Yeah. So absolutely, I think we've kind of beaten Azure as a platform to death, it's great. I love it. And I think it's one of the coolest and most useful things that we've introduced in a long time. But there's another side to Azure, and that's the whole software as a service thing.
Right, absolutely. So let's go ahead and dive in and walk through some scenarios that fits really well. You have some more common scenarios. There's a lot of software as a service things that exist in Azure, but we'll talk through some of the ones that we see customers use more often.
Yeah, but before we do that, just real quick, I want to do that, so hold that thought. But before we jump in, can you just describe to us a little bit about what the difference is between platform as a service and software as a service?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So, last episode that actually I think just went live today, we focused entirely on infrastructure as a service. So running, essentially VMs in a cloud. So the platform as a service is a vehicle by which you can actually post or host applications in the cloud. So we remove the element of having to maintain and manage a server from that burden of administration from customers. They don't have to patch the servers if they can have us to handle all of that for them. We'll ensure that they're clear of any malware, and then we'll also take care of all the hypervisors and the load balancing and all of that stuff, and just let the customers focus on building apps and innovating in that regard. And so software as a service is sort of a step beyond that, where we actually just provide capabilities that customers can use just right out of the box. So an example of that is SQL. So SQL Azure DB. So you think about it, in the on-premises environment or an on-premises world, you have a server that's, in some data center that you're probably a cluster of servers. You have SANs that go along with that. There's IT operations specialists are going to have to maintain the infrastructure, but then you have some DBAs that are going to have to maintain the actual SQL aspects of that machine. So if you kind of move up the stack into the software as a service space, we remove the element of administration, really entirely, up. The only thing the customer has to focus on quite honestly, is the schema. You know, the actual, the tables and indexes and so forth. That's kind of surround that table or that that schema. You know, and store procedures, views, and all of that sort of stuff. And we will maintain and operate the actual SQL backend. You know, allow customers to facilitate backups and restorations. And also maintain and manage, that big iron stuff that customers usually have in that backroom closet in their data center.
Right. So there's no reason that if I wanted to, right, there's no reason that I couldn't go with platform as a service, install an OS, install SQL on that OS, build everything that I wanted into that OS, and then use that SQL database.
Yeah, so platform as a service, actually, you wouldn't install the OS. So that's actually an interesting animal. So what, maybe I can pop open a Visual Studio and show you that what you actually do when you build a solution using PaaS or platform as a service in Azure, one of the more common options is to, build like a ASP.NET application. And you actually do get to dictate what flavor of Windows gets deployed on that machine. But you don't actually... And we sort of abstract that. So we don't actually say, Windows Server 2012. We say OS Family 3. So we give it kind of a numerical moniker as opposed to focusing on, the actual underlying operating system. So there's an abstraction, in other words. So the developer says, this application needs .NET 4.5 and, it needs to run on a Server 2012 or-ish type machine or family of machines. And then when they publish that to the cloud, the Azure Fabric actually provisions the resources needed to host that app. So there is a VM, but it's the element of that VM is removed somewhat. And that VM can be connected to with remote desktop, but it is something that we maintain for the customer, we manage for the customer. So
yeah, but that's platform or software?
That's platform. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And that platform as a service app can use software as a service features such as SQL.
Management on my part for that.
As a customer.
Well, actually,
in the platform as a service space combined with SQL, SQL Azure, there would actually be less because you would have, you would deploy a schema into, the tables and views and so forth needed to drive your app into SQL Azure. And then we would maintain the SQL aspect. And in the platform as a service space, we would manage the customer's VMs. So, we actually would remove, the administrative burden from the customer, if you will. And then if you compare that or contrast that with, a traditional application, you would have some number of servers that would actually have IIFs probably installed on it that would be running in the customer's data center, that the customer would have to maintain all of that, as well as a SQL server. So kind of very... drastically different spectrums of what the customer is ultimately responsible for.
Yeah. Cool. So what are the benefits of software as a service?
Software as a service, I like to think of Azure as a lot of Lego blocks that you can spill out on the floor and, synthesize them together into various cool, solutions that customers can leverage either, for their own benefit or for their customers' benefit. So software as a service is basically a Lego block that can be used, maybe for lack of a better description, standalone or by itself. So, SQL is an example of that. We have, content delivery network is actually a feature of Azure that maybe I would loosely define as software as a service that you would configure in the portal and, wire up to the customer's workload, and they would just use that feature in Azure, as is directly. Traffic manager is another one of those. So if you think about... In the on-premises world, if you have an application, with 20 web servers, you've got, maybe some F5 load balancer or some, really expensive piece of hardware that actually, intelligently balances traffic across all those machines. But we actually have a feature in Azure called Traffic Manager, and you can use that feature not just with stuff in Azure, but with stuff in the customer's data center as well. So that would be another example of that, where you just configure it, point it to the endpoints that you want it to monitor, tell it how you want it to load balance traffic, and it's off and running.
So before we started recording today, you showed us a really cool slide that you were going to go over and kind of showed the different tiers and the cost associated with it. And I think it'd be great to actually bring that up and let you talk about it, because I think that's key information to, you know, if somebody's trying to make up their mind which way they want to go, I think that slide's a great slide for them to understand.
Sure, absolutely. Let's pull it up.
So I see the management console up there, and it looks kind of the same as the management console that we've seen before.
Yes, yeah, there's a plethora of things. Actually, you know, today I think it's 41 or 42, I don't know the exact count, but it's in the 40s, of products that are in Azure. So it's just a vast umbrella of stuff. And this is actually just another section of that same management console. And in fact, actually what I have loaded here is Azure Active Directory. This is actually a test directory that I built actually for the show today.
That's cool. What's the elephant? Is that Pachyderm as a service?
No, that's actually HD Insight. So that's actually the Hadoop. That actually could be, that's another, you know, software as a service types of a solution. We can actually provision, you know, basically a Hadoop cluster for the customer to be able to deal with large, you know, large sets of data.
I was all set to build a virtual elephant.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we don't have those yet. So let's go to the slide.
So Lex, this is actually what you were asking about just a little bit ago, and this actually really shows, you know, the spectrum of options a customer has with regards to SQL. You know, using that as an illustrative example, like that when a customer has an application that needs some sort of data to drive it, as often is the case with applications, you know, they have, you know, this is actually highlighting, you know, four of the more common options. Actually, these are four of the only options that I think that exist today. So, you know, in the physical on-prem environment, you know, that's actually what we were talking about, where you have, you know, big iron servers, you know, SAN, maybe a, you know, cluster of servers that to be able to keep your machine, you know, highly available. And then if you move to a virtualized environment, you know, on-premises, you remove the element of physicality from that server. So, you know, the customer is still responsible, though, for managing and maintaining, you know, the SQL software, you know, partitioning things, you know, the, you know, SQL clustering and all of that stuff. And moving up the stack, this actually is what we talked about on the last show, not necessarily with SQL, but just with servers. The infrastructure is a service. So running VMs in the cloud. So basically taking that virtualization and using our hypervisor that we have in our data center. So we remove the elements of managing the physical hosts from the customer. So the customer still has to manage their SQL server, though, you know, and all of the aspects that goes along with that. And then, you know, moving up here, I just realized now this is platform as a service, but this is, you know, functionally, you know, speaking, it's, you know, software as a service, because it's SQL as a service, you know, from for all intents and purposes. So this is, you know, SQL running in our you know, data center on our, you know, physical SQL boxes, and we just expose, you know, the management elements to the customer to be allow them to deploy their schemas and so forth. So, you know, the actual act of needing to manage, you know, transaction databases and, you know, all of the other stuff that goes along with traditional day-to-day management of that SQL environment is removed, and the customer just needs to manage their schema. So there's a veneer management. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, SQL is just a container, and you have to give it data to be able to make it useful. So the customer still has to do that part of it. But, you know, all of the other elements are removed.
Okay. Yep. Cool. And I noticed we have hybrid cloud up at the top here. It doesn't have to be a hybrid cloud.
That's correct. Yep. So this is actually just showing that, you know, that going from the on-premises to off-premises, and then there's, you know, the hybrid variation of that, you know, could be, you could actually have a physical server that runs in the customer's data center, or virtual, or actually any of these three options below, that you could have an app that runs in Azure that actually connects back to that. So so that would actually establish that hybrid connectivity.
Awesome. All right, so let's take a look at the demo.
Sure. Yep, so this is a you know, the SQL databases that I have running in this particular subscription I'm logged into, and you see I have a database server, Taysa Premier, and if I drill into this, this is now allowing me to manage this particular server. So I can actually see that under the covers, this really is pointing to, you know, it looks like a bunch of gibberish, but it's pointing to a server, but that server is, you know, something that we manage and maintain on behalf of the customer. So the customer just manages the, you know, the actual, you know, SQL elements of, or the schema, as we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Is that just a randomly generated server name? Is that what we do?
Well, that's actually, so that really equates to some server that we have in our data center that the customer's connecting to. So it's a shared tenant, you know, multi-tenant type environment.
Yeah.
So it must be some, it'd be interesting to know the naming convention behind that, but it refers to something, but okay. It is something that there isn't a control over for the customer. Yeah. So in here, I can actually see, you know, this is actually a lower tier of SQL that I stood up that actually has a limit on storage to 2 gigabytes. So, you know, this is actually the cheapest version, even though it's an internal subscription trying to save the company money. So I stood up, one of the smallest subscription types that exists. So showing you how much space is available in here. You can, you know, monitor, you know, connections, you know, any failed connections. So you a lot of the things that maybe a DBA would monitor using, performance monitor or, you know, some of the SQL profiling tools. In here, you can also, scale. So even though I started at the basic tier, I can actually, bump this up to a premium tier or a higher performance level. So the DTUs, this is actually a concept that we have and how we throttle customers. So if I had a big, big database with, with thousands of concurrent users and maybe the queries that were being ran against that particular database were returning lots of rows and, so basically causing a lot of transactions on this particular node that I'm running on, I would impact other customers that are running on that as well. So what we do is have customers actually pay for a certain level of performance, based on, how large the application is, how many users they expect to have. And this actually averts that noisy neighbor problem, to a large degree. So if I start exceeding what I purchased, the performance tier that I purchased, I become throttled. So my transaction...
So what's DTU stand for? Do you know?
Maybe we should pause for a second. I knew you were going to ask that because I'm sorry.
Database throughput units.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so I can pretend I knew that off the cuff. So Alexa, that stands for database throughput units.
Okay.
And that's something that at the basic tier it's limited to 5, but at some of the other tiers I can bump that up to a higher level.
So the difference between basic, standard, and premium is just DTUs and size? Is that what we do?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So you can see that when I flipped it over to standard, I now have 10, 20, and 50. So, 50 would actually be a pretty good amount. And then premium, if I flip over to premium, you can see that now I get, I'm getting, I'm running on, some newer generation hardware with fewer customers running on it, and I'm actually, given more, more throughput, if you will, for my database, but it also comes at a cost, hence the word premium. I'm actually going to be paying a cost premium for making use or taking advantage of that.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yep.
Actually, I prefer to look at it the other way, right? We could do it so that it's, full blown as fast as you can possibly be, as many DTUs as possible. But you may not need that, so we'll also offer a standard and a basic.
That's right, yep.
Yeah.
Yep, so just kind of walking through that, let's see here, under geo-replication. So this actually is also a feature that only exists in premium and standard, as mentioned here, but this is actually something that, in the past, if a customer wanted to run and in the East and West U.S., maybe as a disaster recovery contingency plan standpoint. So actually backing up a little bit more, we actually do have multiple replicas of the customer's database. So like when we do plan maintenance for SQL Azure, we'll actually, move the customer over to one of the replica instances and actually do maintenance on the nodes, completely transparent to the customer so that they're not even aware that we're doing those updates. So, if the customer wants to go a step farther and actually replicate their database maybe across data centers. That is something that we allow them to do, but they have to go up to a higher tier of SQL Azure to be able to accomplish that. And if you think about that, I'm actually in a management environment where I can just literally click buttons to enable this. And if you think about what it takes to set this up in the on-premises space or even in the virtual space or, IS space, you're going to have a DBA, configuring SQL always on or replication between SQL nodes. So they're going to have multiple SQL clusters that they're going to have to configure. So it's not a small amount of work. And, here we're just exposing that, via a couple of clicks in the management portal.
Yeah. So it looks like no geo-replication for basic, just premium and standard.
That's correct, yep.
Okay, cool. Let's hit auditing and security, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
I know that a lot of customers are concerned about security, especially when it comes to, their databases.
Yep, so we actually have some really cool capabilities that just made it into preview. So we have what we call the V12 instance of SQL Server. So if I actually were to try to create a new database, let me just give it see if I say new. This actually is not.
Click on region. There you go.
Yep.
I think that region while you're typing is really important, right? We have government customers that absolutely cannot have data that's not onshore in the U.S.
Right, exactly, yep.
So I'm assuming that when I select, Eastern U.S. or Central U.S., that means that's where the servers are going to be that house the data.
That is correct. And actually, we have out on the Azure Trust Center, we actually highlight where the customer's data, where the customer subscription data, so things like their contact information, their email address, their phone numbers, and all of that sort of stuff, where that's stored. And we, if you deploy to a server in North America, your subscription data will never leave the confines of North America. Likewise, in different regions in Europe and in Asia Pacific, data sovereignty is of utmost interest to a lot of customers these days. So we actually, clearly highlight, where we would actually replicate that data. But in the case of actually deploying a new server, you do get to pick where that gets deployed for, it might actually be, just to get data, closer to where the customer's environment is. So if the customer's maybe connecting to this environment with an app that's running in their own data center, and the customer might be in the East U.S., it would probably benefit the customer from deploying, the database in the East U.S. just to be able to avert, internet latency. So what I was talking about with the new capabilities of SQL Azure, and actually it's in the new management portal when I just went through the wizard that I expected to see it. It's on the new management portal when you create a SQL database, it actually has a checkbox that says V12 features. And one of the things that it has is something called transparent data encryption. And this is a really new feature that a lot of customers have been asking for. You think about PCI compliance protocols that we have, that there's a requirement to have data encrypted at rest. And because SQL, we're managing the customer's SQL environment for them, there's some things that we can't do that maybe a customer necessarily might be able to do in their, if they own the server themselves, if it wasn't multi-tenant, right. In other words. So with transparent data encryption actually allows us to encrypt data that's put into SQL in encrypted at rest. So, to overcome any, regulatory or auditing type challenges that a customer has to abide by. So it's actually a really new feature that customers have been waiting for. So, it's not visible here in the new management portal. Unfortunately, it is in the new management portal.
Yeah. Okay. So this is an older version of the portal.
Yep. So the new port, this is actually Azure.com. The new portal is actually portal.azure.com. So, and the reason I'm in this one is that I was going to show some Azure Active Directory things, and that those are only available in the old portal. So,
That's cool. We've been talking about this episode for a long time anyway. So
I'm
sure you spent months putting this together.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in here you can, you can actually enable, some, different levels of logging that in the logging in SQL is actually stored in a storage account. So, storage, as we talked about in the past, can be used by virtual machines. That's where the VHDs actually reside. But can also be used by customers programmatically for their own use to be able to store information in. And in this case, SQL would actually be depositing, the log information into a storage account that I designate.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
And you can turn on the types of events that will.
Yeah, and the reason why. Log. Right, and the reason why, well, there's a couple of reasons why it was disabled that some customers don't want that. I mean, if it's enabled and just dumping someplace that's not cleaned or purged periodically, it's just going to pile up. And because it's actually stored in Azure, storage is cheap, but, I mean, if you had a really, really busy database and you had all of this stuff enabled, you would be logging all of this stuff in a storage account that, you'd ultimately be paying for. So, again, customers pay for what they need. And we don't, enable extraneous things for them by default that would, accrue additional charges.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So what I have, what I have over here, this is actually Visual Studio, and I had a application that I was working on, just a demo app. But in here, you can see that server name that we saw before. So this is actually using a Server Explorer capability that's actually in Visual Studio 2015. This is actually the release candidate version, so it's actually some new capability. Actually, we've always had capability allowed you to browse and manage things that run in Azure, but it's just gotten progressively better with each iteration of Visual Studio. So in here, I'm actually connecting directly to that database, and I have a table called items. I can actually manage the this will actually load up the schema for us. We can actually see, what tables and what columns I have created. So this is actually the textual version of the singular table that I have here at the moment in this database, and it's just called items. And it has a primary key. This is actually this actually is incremented by one every time a record's inserted into it. So it's an identity column, starts at one, increments by one. And then I have a column called item and a column called price. So these, and it looks like that this graphical representation finally loaded here. But so you can manage it in Visual Studio, so developers can actually interact with it, build their schemas and actually update SQL directly from Visual Studio. Likewise, customers can use some of the management tools that they would use for their on-premises version of SQL to connect to this as well and actually manage, manage the tables and views and store procedures, really just like they would in the on-prem world.
Okay. So what you're doing here is creating a table in a SQL database, I guess DB0, that's actually stored in the cloud.
Yes, that's right. Yep. Yep, that's actually a DBO. So this is just the way the schemas are. This is the way SQL names objects. So it's
okay. Yeah.
But this is actually what I named it as the items.
Items. Yeah. Yep.
So, cool. Yeah. So one of the just two other really quick things that we can show is actually I've got a slide. And I'll just bring it out here real quick just to show you. So this is actually one of the other software as a service type features that I was talking about. And I wanted to show this because I think it's really cool what it can do. So Traffic Manager, if you have an application deployed into multiple data centers, or even an app that runs in the customer's own data center, they can use Traffic Manager to actually load balance requests to that, to different endpoints that the customer has running. So that's actually something. Let me go ahead and just jump into the Traffic Manager, and I'll show you what I've got set up.
Okay.
So there it is, Traffic Manager.
Yeah.
So it's named Ryberry Dev at trafficmanager.net. So this is actually the DNS endpoint that I have exposed publicly. And when I go into this, and I go to endpoints, give it a moment to load here. So this is actually pointing to the two VMs that we worked with last time. And so I've got one running in South Central and one running in the East US. And I've actually configured them for port 80. So what this traffic manager is doing is actually load balancing traffic hitting or going to port 80 to this endpoint. And then it will in turn, based on the rules that I have specified here, either performance or failover round robin, I'll talk about those three here in a second, it'll actually route me to the server that either is closest to me or that, the round robin is just iteratively, routing me to one time, the other the next time, or failover, it would actually route me to a primary and then, the secondary if the primary goes offline. So, lots of different ways customers can use this. But what I have here is a simple web page on the East, VM. This is East VM1. This is actually the public URL for it. And then I have this same page on the other server. And I have a third tab, which is actually that other endpoint, Ryberry Dev. So it's set up for performance. So, the East VM, it must actually be at a lower on a lower latency connection for me than South Central. So it's actually routing me to the East VM. I've not yet got it to flip over to the South Central one, but it it's actually something so, customers can use in the cloud or for their own stuff.
Yeah. So same URL, just different pages, right? You're getting served a page from a different server.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I just put it in a name. Most of the time, customers would have the same application on both servers. But in this case, I just put a name in there so you can actually tell which one is actually coming from. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to tell. It would just look the same, and it wouldn't really be that interesting of a demo. So,
yeah, cool.
So, and then the final thing that we could talk through is something that anybody who does any infrastructure or server management with Windows today certainly knows about, and that's that's Active Directory.
Is it under the Snowflake as a Service icon?
Yeah, this one up here, is that the one you're talking about?
I'll go up, scroll up. Yeah. You'll see it. There we go. Snowflake as a Service.
Oh yeah, that BizTalk. Yeah. So that's the hub and spoke icon. But yeah, definitely that's actually another software as a service component. So that's BizTalk running in the cloud.
Yeah, right above WindGear as a service.
Yeah. Exactly. So Active Directory, customers can use that in their own data center. But when you start moving to the cloud, whether it be Office 365, CRM Online, customers usually want to centrally manage user access. So they want to, if somebody leaves a company, they want to be able to turn it off in their Active Directory and have, any of their online services that they might have been accessing also get terminated or suspended. Likewise, if they add somebody new, maybe that would be the more positive way to look at it, that it would actually flow up and would function for any applications that's running in CRM Online or Office 365 as an example. So what I have is I have a directory controller that's actually running on a virtual machine in Azure, and Microsoft is showing up here because I'm actually logged in my Microsoft account, but I've created another directory that's cloudtest.com, and when I go into this, let me just go ahead and flip to the directory integration tab. This is one that I was on when you were asking about it. I've got Directory Sync activated, and what I'm actually using is a new capability we have as in preview called Azure AD Connect, and it's actually really easy to set up. Let me go ahead and fire it up. So this is actually the server that actually the you know, quote unquote on-prem server, or in this case, it actually just happens to be running in Azure. And it's a wizard that actually is really straightforward. That you actually point it to the Azure AD environment, and you point it to your on-prem AD environment, and it will actually set up all those services and plumbing to make the two synchronize and replicate. So if I were to create a new user in this particular forest, it would actually replicate up into my directory that I have up here in Azure. So the advantage of having that plumbing in place is that if you're using Office 365 or CRM Online, as I mentioned, that you get that single sign-on experience, but you can also use it for custom line of business applications a customer may be building. You can use it for authorizing individuals into the Azure portal. So I'm logged in with my Microsoft credentials into the management environment here. That's actually done using this same sort of federated identity that plumbing that Microsoft IT has put into place to allow me to use my corporate credentials to log into the Azure portal. So I'm logging into an online service using the same credentials I use to log into my PC in the morning.
Cool.
So there's a couple different examples of some software as a service stuff. We've seen SQL. The traffic manager is kind of a simplistic example, which is why I showed it. Kind of more of a feature that can be used just out of the box as is with some configuration in Azure. I didn't have to deploy anything to Azure to make it work. And then the Active Directory, federation and integration as well. So any questions or?
Well, no. This is actually very, very cool. It's a lot of information, but. But very interesting stuff. So if I'm a customer and I've listened to this show and I want to maybe read about the differences, so that I can present, the people that make the decisions, where can I go? Where can I get more information about platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, software as a service, et cetera?
That's a really good question. So it's actually two places that I would recommend. Yeah, actually, Azure.com is probably one of the best because it actually highlights all of the capabilities in just briefly, and then you can obviously dive right in and learn a lot more if you want to explore it farther. But there's another website called Microsoft Virtual Academy, and there's a tremendous amount of freely available training. So, for instance, if you wanted to explore building an app using PaaS, well, there's a lot of training out there that's free that will walk the customer step by step, with labs and training videos and so forth. So
That's cool. Okay, well, Ryan, as always, that was friggin' awesome. I learned what the icons meant. I know that we don't actually have a Pachyderm as a service. That's good to know. And no, that was great, man. You were really detailed, and I think that's awesome. And I certainly love having you on the show. So thank you again for another great one.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well. Without further ado, you've got busy stuff to do, so that's our Taste of Premiere.